Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
Discover over 100 episodes of Bartholomew Town on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
It's something that I learned a long time ago. If you find it interesting, more often than not, most hosts will find a way to present it in an interesting way so that people can get it, but you don't lose them. And I think, I don't want to say it's a lost art form, but I think it's a lesson that isn't learned by a lot of hosts. I've been very lucky to be in and out of a lot of different places.
Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. On today's episode, I sit down with sports talk personalities Andy Gresh and Brett Ferruccio. And Gresh, of course, no stranger to sports audiences here in Rhode Island, New England, and nationally. And now in recent times, the host of a daily sports talk show on WPRO Providence, as he says, the non-carpetbagger sports talk here in Rhodey. Now, when I set up this interview, it was really of utmost importance to me to also feature Brett Ferruccio. Now, he's Gresh's producer, and the two of them, they have a great back and forth, a great rapport. And whether you love sports or really can't stand them, the radio show that these two put on a regular basis is filled with hilarity. So, very pleased to have both Andy Gresh and Brett Ferruccio at the Loft for an in-depth conversation. By the way, you don't want to miss Gresh's breakdown and assessment of the New England sports media. Fascinating stuff right there. And of course, we spent a lot of time talking more political and general news media on Bartholomew Town. But hey, look, sports talk, it is a huge part of this market. No question about that. And Andy Gresh, he's one of the leading voices when it comes to sports around here in this market, that's for sure. So lots to get to, and we covered quite a bit of ground, so stay tuned and enjoy.
Support for Bartholomew Town comes from High Hope, located at 38 Broadway in downtown Newport, Rhode Island. Discover more at highhoperi.com.
And you can support the pod by sharing an episode on social media. All right, without further ado, my conversation with Rhode Island sports talkers Andy Gresh and Brett Ferruccio. All right, so we are here. We've got the entire deck from 6 to 9 right here, the WPRO team, minus the Z-Man, I suppose. Maybe we can bring
him in. He's here in spirit, the Z-Man.
Andy Gresh, Brett Ferruccio, the host and executive producer of The Gresh Show, the local edition, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m., on the station that reaches the beaches, 630, 99.7 WPRO.
Oh, you went way back in the day in the 40s when they were spinning the hits. Was the dance party at night.
I like that tagline, though. I always liked that tagline. The station that reaches the beaches, it rolls off the tongue very nicely.
Our friend Dave Morris will be ripping that off on Pro FM in about 8 seconds after hearing this.
That'd be good John Batchelor. I know you guys love John Batchelor at the station. My colleague and friend Andrew Gresh.
Yes, well, I was at the beach with Andy Gresh in Peru. They thought it was a whale who washed up. He was shot, and now it's the Rooch Hour.
Gordon Chang, have you washed your banana hammock since last we swept across the beaches of Tahiti? John Batchelor really is he's a piece of work, that guy.
It's something else. You know, there's nothing like that classical music blasting and then the news talk. Well, 99.7 station.
You know what the music is, Bill.
What do you got there?
He's got the two favorite music beds that John Batchelor likes to play. We've got the musical score from The Last of the Mohicans. So the Daniel Day-Lewis film there. And the musical score from the film The Ides of March. Now, these are two film scores that if you watch the movies, they get ingrained in your head. And so I hear them on the John Batchelor show, and I'm just like, this guy's just ripping off movie scores. And I say that negatively. I appreciate the effort. But now they just, every time I'm going home after working with Gresh, and I just have these movie scores just pounding through my head, and freaking John Batchelor.
I don't think John Batchelor's producer has that kind of analysis of John Batchelor's music on his show.
Yeah. Seb Gorka, though, loves Last of the Mohicans.
Seb! Yeah.
Thaddeus McConnell.
Oh, of course.
The list goes on.
The great voice of the Great Lakes, Thaddeus McConnell. Thaddeus, I'm not allowed to have anyone with a normal name on my program. Seb, isn't that true, Gordon?
If we were to make up, like, the first city council in 1777 or something like that, that's what these names would be. Seb Gorka, yeah. Thaddeus, whatever the you know, hell his name is.
That's right. And then, of course, you'd have Bob Zimmer behind the black on there as well.
He'd be of like course, the, of course.
He'd be the normie.
Yeah. Well, it must be an interesting life being on the radio these days. I mean, 630 WPRO is a news talk station by design, but it's one of the last live local news talk stations, really, that is in the country now. Mm-hmm. Sports has survived in some pockets, obviously, the Philly station, the Fan in New York. And in Boston, there's kind of two stations. But you're the only, you referenced this a lot, Andy, Carpetbaggers coming in from the outside.
Man.
You're the only your Rhode Island sports talk show. What's that like?
Well, it's psychologically, I think it's a little different because, you know, we know that the big boys, and look, I was there for a while. We never touched Providence College and never paid attention to college sports. Hell, you know, when I worked with Zolak, we're the football guys. And there was, you know, there's a guy from Boston College who's a finalist for the Heisman and no one cared. So I think you sort of, you learn how to do the show based on the audience that you're serving. There was the old line from Sinatra, you know the room you're working. And for me, it comes easy because number one, I started here in Providence. But number two, the bleed in of the major market sports will always be there. That's why it's the New England Patriots. You know, it may say Boston Bruins, but everybody in New England's fired up about them. So it's interesting because it gives us the ability to go down different roads when we need to. We like college sports,
yep.
Rouge
and
I.
Oh, yeah.
And that's different than you get in a lot of major markets. Even, you know, times I filled in at Fan, you know, they'll be like, hey, you know, college doesn't really play here very much. And,
right.
You know, having worked in Hartford, which is similar to Providence in terms of the college feel, I think that's the biggest difference in the show is that, you know, we'll mix in college stuff and not ignore what's going on here. But, you know, the bulk of it is still Bruins, Red Sox, Patriots, Celtics, and then whatever we decide to mix in that's interesting to us. I interned at FAM when Mike and the Mad Dog were really just starting to hit that zenith, and I worked for Russo for a year at Sirius. And, you know, he would walk around with the whole, "Hey, you're not a fan of baseball, you're not going to be able to talk about it," going crazy. But he would be screaming at the television about a second-round match in the French Open.
Right.
With two people that no one had any idea about, but he was into it. So when he talked about it, it could lose some people, or it's all in the presentation. And I think that's, you know, that's the real key ingredient is if you're going to do it very mechanically, you'll lose people. But if you do it with a wink and a nod and some fun, you know, like Dog wasn't a huge horse racing guy, but Francesa was. So it's like, you know, and there are times with Rooch where I'll let him lead a little bit, or I'll tee him up and be like, tell me about this guy. Tell me about when we get into Celtics and them working out 600 players for their three first-round picks. He's got an idea on a lot of them. You just got to, you know, it's playing a guitar the right way. Sometimes you just sometimes you play it out of key and it stinks and you realize it and you bail. Or most of the time you play it in key and it sounds good.
Or sometimes you play it out of key and all of a sudden you've made art rock, you know?
Oh, look, we've stumbled into dumb stuff. I mean, we really have. And, you know, like our guy Perry was one of them. It was like, oh, this guy will sound great on the air. And sure enough, it was like, oh, yeah, this is a treasure chest of things to be able to have fun with. Yeah. But we have that creative license, and the one good thing about the management at our place is that they kind of trust me, they trust us, and it's like, okay, they're not going to, you know, we sort of lead the way when it comes to the sports end of things, which is very different from a sports station because sometimes you'll have a program director, an assistant program director, and then like a sports director, and just getting through the layers of muck, it's mind-numbing.
Right, the business side of it and answering basically to the brands that are feeding each other, whether that's the sports brands or the entertainment companies that present them. You know, there's a relationship there between what you're talking about and the moneymakers out there as well. And you don't want to piss too many people off if you're at the top.
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, you can tick people off. You can still do business. You can do it the right way. And one of the things that I try to hammer with our interns is learn the business and learn corporate structure. Because it used to be 20 years ago that you could still have a feel of who you're working for in radio. And now there are the people in your building, but the people way above, you know, those are the ones who at the end of the day, if it came down to it, they're the ones that are going to make the decisions from whatever tower they sit in. And understanding that before you get in the business allows you to make much better decisions. Because even from 10 years ago, I mean, I got in 21 years ago, for crying out loud. 21 years ago to, you know, 10 years being in to now where it's at now. It's a completely different business.
Let's talk about the origins of the Gress Show, the modern version of it. You know, obviously, you took over that 6 to 9 slot. There was some shuffling on the WPRO lineup. Tara Granahan moved to the day part, the early day part, and seemed like John Laughlin was going to take over that evening slot, or it was going to somehow turn into some other extension of the Dan York Show, maybe, especially in that 6 to 7 hour. Maybe that was some of the thinking. And then, boom, one day in the middle of the winter, the Gress Show is coming to WPRO. What happened?
Well, it's a couple of things. Number one, I had to fight to get Rooch. We walk this all the way back. When the Score was in existence, which was the sports radio station in Providence, he was an intern of ours.
That's right.
And there, so this goes all the way back to, Jesus, 07, something like that.
Yep.
In terms of us knowing Rooch. And I say us because when Zoe and myself and their producer, Jim Louth, that group had been together, we needed somebody. One of the people we talked about was, gee, do we pull Rooch and get him up there? And I'm so glad we didn't, because I'm lucky to have him. Because let me tell you something. Yeah, I am. I'm being damn selfish on this, because who they wanted to put me with, and I won't say the name, but mother of God, I'd have pulled my hair out by now.
Gotcha.
And so basically, here's the long and short of it. So when I had my, I'll call it a divorce from the Sports Hub, CBS wanted to keep me. They put me in Hartford for a little while. So I was driving back and forth from Seekonk to Hartford. I mean, just,
it's a tough commute.
Brutal. I mean, I ate more KFC than I'll ever eat again in my life on those runs. But, you know, I had like a flirtation with the market manager for WPRO, and the first negotiation went really bad, and it was like, all right, maybe this isn't going to happen. And then for me, I was at a crossroads. I either could have gone to New York and gone national on CBS Sports Radio 5 days a week. That offer was there.
Really?
And, I basically chose between going national and coming here. And a lot of people were looking like you now, being like, oh, really? There wasn't a huge money difference. I would have had to have figured out how to be in New York at least 4 days a week, which was, I had people who were like, don't worry, we can put you up down there. I had some funding, let's put it that way, in terms of from a family end. But it was just a natural fit to kind of come back here. And plus, I got comfortable with the market manager, Holly Paris, whose husband had been in the market for 100 years and is a big fan. And I told her, I said, look, you got to give me Brett. I'm like, no, we have somebody to be great, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm telling you, you're screwing this up. Give me Brett. And it turned out that the other thing fell through, and they were like, okay, you're going to get your way. And about 2 weeks in, they were like, yeah, you were right. Like, you know, it was, you knew what you were doing. But a lot of it really is monetary, number one, because it wasn't being tapped in the market locally. And it was something different on a station where all you hear is F Trump, F the governor, love the governor, love Trump, F the governor. And it was, we're kind of the slice of life. It's like, okay, you can get your politics from 6A to 6P. However, we're going to put these dumbasses on from 6 to 9 and give you something different on the way home. And I think that was kind of the thought process. And Knock on wood.
Yeah.
It's to this point, as I like to say, I'm peeing on the rug. So, you know, and I try to shield him from peeing on the rug.
Yeah,
there
yeah,
with a cup all the time. No, but
house trained.
But it's the, it's with one person in the building, I think, in Holly Paris, who really believed. I don't know how many other people in the building really were like, oh, this is the thing to do. I think it was path of least resistance. Let's put somebody political in there and be political from 6 to 9. She had a different vision, and I'm grateful for it because I do think it's worked in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, it's definitely changed the station's brand, that's for sure. And it, you know, your radio show, and one of the reasons why I wanted to have each of you in here is because I think it's such a fun radio show. It's classic. It moves. You're always a step ahead. Seems like you're able to really understand each other's thought processes. Like I say, one step ahead of where the listener is.
We're both helpless degenerates. So,
from a thought process standpoint,
it's pretty easy to see what's coming next. It's usually what's the least common denominator over here.
And then they make sports betting legal, which gives us something completely different to mix into what is the normal sports content. Because we know this, and even like there are no metrics or numbers that we could say, boy, this tells us da-da-da. We know the degenerati is out there.
Yeah.
And again, they want to hear the sports analysis, but they want to hear the gambling part of it without the gambling part of it taking over and losing people. And I think we found a really good balance on something like that. So we throw the word like degenerate or degenerati around. It's not in a negative connotation.
Term of endearment.
Yeah, it really is. It's sort of a term of inclusiveness, I think, in a way.
And it's funny because when you first called me, when we had, you know, it was finalized that we were going to be doing the show together, and you called me, I remember one of the first things I said to you, and this was before all the sports betting talk had really ramped up. I was like, we need to talk more about sports betting.
Yeah.
I was like, nobody talks about it. It's like, who cares about the legality? Obviously, billions and billions of dollars are being spent. It's not illegal to talk about these things. You know, so somebody's using an offshore book. That's not my problem. I mean, hey, this stuff is so such a big part of the game, whether people want to believe it or not. And yeah, the boom in sports betting has certainly helped because we want to talk about that stuff anyway.
Right.
So it's just like, oh, well, great. Now other people are talking about it. Let's do it up.
And I think one other thing, too, that he mentioned, and it's something that I learned a long time ago. If you find it interesting, more often than not, most hosts will find a way to present it in an interesting way so that people can get it, but you don't lose them. And I think, I don't want to say it's a lost art form, but I think it's a lesson that isn't learned by a lot of hosts. I've been very lucky to be in and out of a lot of different places. Some I left voluntarily, some I got thrown out of. But at every place I learned something. And, you know, I remember being at ESPN and they said, hey, look, even if it's different, tell us, like, make it interesting. When I went to ESPN quickly and I did shows there, you did a 3-hour radio show and you were allowed to take calls for one segment. Most national shows, like the one I do on CBS Sports Radio, are you kidding me? I tee it up for 4 hours, I take calls, I talk to the Rubes, and there we go. And it's an easy show to go out and do. But people don't hear the, hey, go ahead and do it. They think, oh, we got to be formulaic and we have to do this, we have to do that. No, not with us. I mean, and even if it's a stupid story, like, I mean, Florida Man is the greatest content ever in terms of talking about just people doing dumb stuff.
Yeah, it's always there for you, no matter what.
Absolutely.
What was it like for you before this show started? What were you doing career-wise?
Career-wise, I was working still at Cumulus in Providence. I was just producing a lot of shows for 790, which is another talk station in the building.
Yes, news. What is it? News business?
Talking business.
Talking business.
Well, excellent. Bill, funny, I've gone through several iterations of AM 790. Let's see, I started interning at 790 The Score with Gresh and Zolak and Jim Louth, who will probably never hear this podcast, but taught me 92% of the stuff that I know. But then we were true oldies, 790 for a while. And when The Score folded, I got a call from Ron St. Pierre, our former boss and Andy's good friend. And he was like, I need one person. He's like, do you want, like, everybody else is gone. Do you want to keep working here? And I was basically like, yeah, sure. I got nothing else going on. So I told people this, so it's not revisionist history. I was waiting for sports to come back to the market. I really was.
Yeah.
And when I heard that Gresh was coming back, I marched into management's office and was like, I'm the best person to do this show with him. And I was so proud of myself when I said that. I left the room. You know, I left the room. I was like, that's what you should have done, dude. Like, good for you. Good for you. Even if you get fired right now and they label you as arrogant, yeah. It's like, yeah, that's what you got to do. And thankfully it worked out, you know, probably not because of that. But yeah, I was waiting around working a lot of things that I had zero interest in. But just trying to stay sharp and fingers crossed. And thankfully, Gresh came back and we were of a like mind and onward and upward.
And you don't do the national show. You're not, you don't
travel. No, no. I'm actually in the building before him on Saturdays doing another show on AM 790 with the aforementioned Z-Man. So if you want to listen to car advice on Saturday mornings at an ungodly hour, by all means, feel free to tune into that.
Hey, Zane Gary's, I got a carburetor in a 1972 Studebaker. Can you help me out?
Exactly. So there you go. Yeah, that's pretty much... that's pretty much my story, and I spend all the time I'm not working here watching television, usually, and movies, and that's about it.
Or playing DraftKings.
That's right. Yeah, I'm a big gambler, degenerate, investor, degenerate.
Must be nice to have Twin River here, then.
Oh, sure. I mean, all the gambling establishments you can have, the more the merrier. I say bring them on. I'm looking forward to the day when I can walk into... you know, Dunkin' Donuts, I'm sure a proud sponsor soon to be of the Bill Bartholomew podcast. And I want to be able
to get one of ours in there. Thank you.
Exactly. I want to get my iced coffee and put some money down on a favorite team of mine. So the future is now, Bill. So let's embrace it and thrive.
Drive through sports betting. Here it comes.
Exactly. From your phone. You don't even need to get in your car.
So you're pretty pissed at Brandon Bell and all these guys from the sort of the Republican effort to try to stall gambling based on a technicality. I mean, you don't think it's happening anyway, right?
It's what happens here in Rhode Island. B, it's already up and running. I think it would take a Herculean effort for it to be put on pause, and there would be a bit of an uproar. If there's like future expansion, then maybe it goes to vote. But, you know, from the people that I've talked to who are associated with it, they think they're on good legal standing. And my interaction with Brandon Bell on that was very interesting because he made a crack about running the sports book. And I was like, all right, so come on with me and let's find out what you know about running a sports book. And he was in with Dave York before Dave got in the helicopter to go home. And I went in and he was like, I'm just poking the bear, man. I'm not doing it. Like, and it was like, no, I'm just poking the politicians. Like, don't choke me or kill me or anything like that, which I wasn't going to. But I think the part of the reason I'm sensitive to it is because there's a lot of misinformation out there and a lot of people. That's one thing that I do think, and I've heard this feedback from both Twin River and the lottery, is that they like the way we talk about it because it educates people on some stuff that maybe they wouldn't normally ask a question about in terms of sort of like house. And this is much more Rooch's lane than mine. I'm functional. I'm okay. I'm good. He's got it way better just because of, you know, poker and all that, you know, real-time sort of gambling that Rooch used to
road do. Road-tested over here.
Yeah, very much so.
I tell people all the time in terms of sports betting because now, as I'm 36 now, and probably between 18 and 25, I was a horrendous sports bettor. You know, like just like the average person out there.
Right.
And so I try to feed that to people where it's like, listen, I'm coming from, like, I was you. And it's not like I'm trying to save anybody. This is like a reclamation project. But it's just like, listen, from the perils of sports betting to the ups and downs, it's just like anything else. And the fact that, you know, you started this off, people want to review it or whatever. Well, the first dirty secret, thankfully, Andy and I both live in Massachusetts, so we don't have to worry too much about the Rhode Island politicos. But yeah, all these things, if you're uninformed, and I don't mean that at all in a negative way at all, but just if you're uninformed about something, I can totally see, and I say this on the show all the time, I can totally see why people would be frightened. Whoa, if you get this on your phone, you might go nuts. And well, yeah, but if that were the case, and I always bring it up, that the Amazon would have broken all of us a long time ago. You know what I mean? So in terms of the regulation, I get why people want to get their ducks in a row. But just to echo what Andy said, it's only a matter of time before this is all legal everywhere. And, you know, these are just politicos jockeying for a position. So they're going to do what they're going to do. Let them do what they're going to do.
Let's talk about the local, the two of the teams that you can't bet on, who are the big teams in town, really, the PC Friars and URI Rams when it comes to men's college basketball. I guess Brown, even Bryant, starting to make more of a play. Brown's always there, weaving in and out of the conversation. What's the, when it comes to sports, though, we're still a Boston-centric place, right? College basketball, that's not Rhode Island's, you know, bread and butter. We're still Red Sox, Patriots, Bruins, and Celtics.
I think the Big Four drive the day, but I think the sense of pride that people in Rhode Island have for PC and URI in particular, that's where we're different from everybody else. Look, the former flagship station of the Friars, not easy to figure out that they were on the Carpetbagger station. They went to 5 straight NCAA tournaments. You know how many times Ed Cooley was on one of their shows? Zero. That was a huge knock against them, and very much what made us appealing, because, you know, the day Ed Cooley, and that they announced a contract extension for Ed Cooley when Michigan came calling, we led the show. 6'10", boom, here's Bob Driscoll. If that would have happened 2 years ago, no one would have heard from Bob Driscoll and talking about it. And I think that's where when people say roadie pride, that's where PC, URI, if Bryant ever got hot, or if Brown made the NIT like 10 years ago or something like that or whatever, you know, but you understand it's harder for those two teams to make the tournament compared to URI and PC. But I think that that's where the real sense of pride is, and that's where we would kick the ass of everybody else, because we're on it. We know those people. We have the connections. I went to URI. We're the flagship station of PC. And, oh, by the way, if a Syracuse question or anything else college basketball comes up, Roots jumps in, and that's where his knowledge of across the board in terms of college basketball really helps us in terms of those discussions.
Yeah, and the thing I love the most about college basketball, and this applies to college football too, but the local teams are more, you know, basketball focused, and that's how you kicked off the conversation, is like, if the Red Sox are bad, people just write them off. And by people, I just mean the average fan. But if a college basketball team is bad, usually, and this is my experience speaking for myself and just what I've seen through the years, they get upset and might watch their team even more to try to figure out what's wrong with it, which recruits they need. This guy's got to go. This guy needs to sit down. They need to be playing this guy. And that's one of my favorite things about the analysis, is your team can be bad for a while in college, and the passion is still there. You don't have the bandwagon periphery fans that come with, you know, a good NCAA tournament run or something like that, but just the passion and the knowledge that those people tend to have, for me, it's like above the average fan, because they seem more invested. Probably, maybe they're an alum, they have some skin in the game, but that's what I love. Like, that's why for me, college basketball, if none of these local teams even had football teams, the fact that you have four college teams, two of them upper echelon, maybe then Brown mixed in there as well, and Bryant's on the up, on the come there, I mean, I love it. So, I mean, we could talk about that stuff till the cows came home. I would love it, and I know that people in this area love it as well. They just need a little more taste, a few more tastes of success. Maybe a Final Four from one of those teams really stoked
the
fire.
Right, a nice Elite Eight run, something like that would help. And look, in terms of the Big Four sports, the Patriots and the NFL is always number one. And I think you'll hear that everywhere. Like on my national show, normally I can bring up NFL, and I know I'm going to get a reaction. And with the Patriots being as popular as they are, same thing here. And I also think, too, there's that Brady's coming to the end of his run. So, you know, I thought it was going to be sand sliding out of an hourglass very quickly. Now it's just sand going very slowly at the end of this Brady run. And maybe they have two more years. But I think the level that the Patriots are at, you can go hyper-local, you can always talk Patriots. And then, as Rich said, it's kind of like the team du jour. You know, if the Red Sox aren't good, especially since they won a World Series, people will be like, we won it last year, to hell with it. Let's just get ready for Brady and another season for the Pats. And I do think people do get sucked into championship round and Bruins. And, you know, drama always sells. That's why the Celtics were a little popular. Mm-hmm. But they'll get popular again here at the end of the month when the draft happens and free agency opens up and yada, yada, yada.
What do you think is the biggest sports story of the year around here? Is it Tiger winning the Masters, or is it Ed Cooley staying in Providence?
Patriots winning the Super Bowl.
Still that.
Yeah.
Still by far.
Because it's adding on to the legacy of the greatest player we've ever seen in any sport in New England.
So locally, right? Because, yeah. I mean, something, and this just sort of dawned on me. The run that Virginia made isn't getting enough love. I think historically it'll get a lot more love, but that's not really locally. Just the way all those buzzer beaters they won with, like right. in the NCAA tournament, it was just kind of crazy the way they
coming back from the losses,
yeah,
the one
and all
seed.
That stuff there, the call there at the end of the game, it was just kind of crazy. But no, it's got to be, I guess, the Patriots Super Bowl. God, the Cooley thing seems like either A, it never happened, or B, it was 15 months ago.
The Cooley thing happened so quick.
It was a day,
I mean, it was
right?
a day, yeah, boom, yeah. and then it was done. You know, you wonder about the whole, I mean, that, Rooch and I go back and forth on the whole, I'll go back to something Mad Dog Russo used to scream in the hallways at Sirius when he would hear people talking about college sports. You would just say, that college sports is a cesspool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all you would hear. And while it's right, talking about that sometimes is really the hook of talking college sports. Like,
yeah.
We've clowned around a lot about the whole FBI investigation. Is it going to change things? And all, you know, it's kind of like a running thread that we've had as that story comes up all the time. But it's, I mean, to think of Belichick and Brady not being a part of our sports lives. You know, we haven't gotten there yet. It's pretty crazy to think about. I mean, that guy's pushing 70. Brady's pushing 45. You thought they both would have exited stage left. And instead, what now on their 20th year, I think it is, they're still the driving force, in my opinion, kind of in the whole New England sports landscape, because everybody loves to talk about Brady or Belichick, good or bad.
Yeah, what's the generation after mine? I don't know. I guess I'm millennial, Gen Z, whatever. The next, so people probably born in like 1990 or afterwards, they are screwed. Because yeah, at least I have some memory of, and decent memory. I mean, heck, I was, in my 20s before the Red Sox won. Yep. And, I was 18 when the Patriots won. But I remember Foxborough Stadium. Like, when it was not a place to be at
all. Sullivan Stadium.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. And I remember the Red Sox struggling and obviously not winning. So, but the kids born, and this isn't me on my front porch shaking my fist. This is more like a, whoa, I'm kind of interested to see what's going to happen. Because we are living in a time right now that is absurd. And I always throw in, Bill, one extra for me is I was at Syracuse when they won the national championship.
Yeah.
So I have no complaints. And I say this to Gresham, like, you will never hear me complain about if my team loses. I mean, I celebrated like 6 championships in a 4-year span up at college. It's like, I'm done. I was in my early 20s and I got to do that. But this next generation coming up, it's probably going to be a little weird for them in terms of, oh, why aren't all our teams winning right now? Shouldn't at least 2 of them, probably 3, maybe all 4 of them be competing for a title? But that's probably not going to be the case.
My 17-year-old, he's my stepkid, but he's my kid, has seen like 4 Super Bowl wins at 17. And has like and
think about
no,
Jets fans, people
right?
like this.
I know,
you know?
I know.
No idea, right?
And I'm not there yet to feel sorry for those people, okay? Because most of them are Yankee fans anyway, like the Jet fans you mentioned. But at some point, you know, it's just sort of like, I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, I'm not playing, right. So don't yell at me. Right? I'm not the one winning all the championships.
Blame Fireman Ed.
Yeah, exactly.
New England sports media, there's some legacy personalities here. You were obviously a part of one of the most popular shows in the market,
sure.
The broad market for a long time. I don't know how your current show stacks up against, you know, regionally. I don't know.
Whatever. Yeah, we really can't compare ourselves against the sports stations because half of the time they'll have play-by-play on. You know what I mean? It's one of those, I sort of think people know where we are and all that stuff. But yeah, the Boston sports media is a pretty interesting group.
When I grew up, when I discovered EEI, it was right in the thick of what we were talking about when we first started the podcast. Red Sox fever, 2003, 2004, even a little bit of Boston College basketball through Al Skinner and that kind of period. That was sort of the talk at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I just became really hooked on, you know, Dale and Noumi, you know, that brand of sports talk. Nerdy. You know, just
Noumi's great.
Yeah, just this real specific. It shifted. The big show obviously changed. The format changed.
Mm-hmm.
Then the station, then the Sports Hub came along, and everything changed as far as EEI and the market in general. From your perspective here, you've kind of got your own corner of this market carved out for yourself. You have your a listenership that's beyond just Rhode Island. You reach people through your podcast. I'm sure you have Sports Hub and national fans that listen to that. What's your take on New England sports media? You know, we've had the fallout from Menahan. You know, I don't want to, you don't have to name too many names, but we've seen changes.
Well, no,
here,
I think most people are pretty aware of sort of what I think of them, and I sort of know what they think of me. Yeah. So the one thing that I've never been on that is shy. And there's a bunch of dicks in that, in the Boston sports media scene, in part because there are people who take themselves too seriously, number one, or people who have too much pride to admit that something isn't working, we need to pivot. And that's, you know, I look at it from afar and I say, Jesus, why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? But it's not my job to fix that stuff. But, you know, I think I'm probably the best and the worst person to talk about this. Because number one, I know a lot of these people. And there are some that I have terrible relationships with. There are some that I thought I had better relationships with that through the whole battle between the Sports Hub and EEI, I found out, okay, I know where you are. Here's my problem, okay? And you'd mentioned like Menahan's. You know, like the first time I met that guy, it was through Gary Tangway at TV, and I knew what he thought of me, and he didn't like me. So I probably wasn't very nice. To me, that's a normal human response. With me, if I know where you stand, you're going to get treated accordingly. And you know what? If that's a flaw in my personality, then it is. I'm too direct sometimes. I'm too blunt sometimes. But I've learned over the years in terms of how to deal with people behind the scenes. But in terms of like some of the on-air people, you know, I could run down the whole list of the people I like and don't like. But I think there have been some who are hanging on because they maybe have a relationship with a certain team and a company, you know, lets someone go and they bring them back and then they sign into a contract and then they're like, oh, Jesus, I don't want this person anymore. They don't know what to do with them and then they start moving the deck chairs around, you know? I mean, I have no hate towards Glenn Ordway whatsoever, but I wrote in my book, The Great Book of Boston Sports Lists, that the reason that guy was successful on The Big Show was because he cracked the then Arbitron code before all the gizmos where you were writing stuff down, where he brought in people in who said the stuff that people remembered. And I wrote in the book, and I don't think Glenn liked it, but I thought it was true. Tell me something that guy has said that you remember. But if you think of the old Big Show days, tell me something that the people he brought in said.
Sean McAdam, Tomasi, even Pete Shepard.
Felger, who is a dick. Yep. But he grew up on that show, you know what I mean? But those were the guys who really benefited because they were the ones that were saying what needed to be said. And yes, it was under the whole Glenn umbrella. But a part of the reason to me why ultimately that show fizzled out was because at the end of the day, the host has to be the guy who is driving the narrative. If Rooch got hit by a bus, you know, he's got the Van Johnson look with the shades inside right now.
Well, it's sunny, though.
I had to go to the Uncle Leo. But you know what I mean? Like, I have to be the one who knows that I can drive the narrative and drive the content and know how to do it and present it. And not as – and I like relying on other people. But if your whole sort of model is relying on those other people to be the ones to say stuff that you're not saying, then people are going to, you know, that part of the reason why Felger's so popular was because he was the guy saying a lot of stuff on The Big Show. But, you know, at the time, it's, I'm making a ton of money. I'm number one in Boston. Why would I ever change it? Okay, fine. But all of us have to try to be ahead of the curve a little bit in terms of where the business is going. But yeah, and it's really interesting. Like I did the Matt Allen podcast like you did.
Yeah.
And
I've yet to be invited on the Matt Allen podcast.
Well, he doesn't know enough about sports gambling to be able to actually
to me about movies or something.
Well, that is true. Although I get a funny
ancient
feeling.
Aliens.
Yeah, but the stuff that he watches, I mean, he's watching stuff on PBS or breaking down
Richard
line
Attenborough
budgets
and
constitutions.
That's right.
But you know, in terms of these Boston sports media people, it's highly competitive. And I do think that for a time, especially when I was there, the EEI Sports Hub thing was very, very real.
Yes.
And it's almost like WWF.
The Monday Night Wars.
Yeah, the Monday Night Wars. Absolutely. Right? Exactly. And there's an immense amount of pride that I take in being a part of the group, because it was a group, that ended up taking down that version of that radio station with some of those people, and if I, okay, and some of the real assholes that worked there at that time during that battle, like, I'm so glad to be able to look at them and peg them the finger.
Yeah, and the big difference was the Sports Hub talked about WEEI, acknowledged that it existed, mm-hmm. and on the other hand, EEI stayed in their lane,
yeah.
you know, and never engaged in that battle until it was too late.
The Sports Hub welcomed Bruins fans.
That was a big, that was huge.
Right.
From the outside, that was, I remember because I was still down at Cumulus and I was watching these guys do their thing and I had some conversations with Jim Louth, his producer, and it was like a tidal wave had crested and you were watching, you're like, oh, well, maybe, you know, this municipality, being WEEI, yeah, they probably got some flood walls or something, and then they'll put them up, and yeah, there'll still be some high water, but, and then you were like, oh, wait, they don't even have any sandbags. And the Bruins wave, I watched it happen, I listened to it happen in real time, and it was just one of those things where, you know, WEEI, and I can't really necessarily blame them, but they had built a show, I remember you said you listened to Dale and Numi. Well, when Dale and Holly had teamed up in the middays, they had a Bruins Minute where Michael was allowed to talk about the Bruins for 1 minute, usually a week, in this 15-hour or 20-hour block that they had. So for them then to try, not this just that show, it was all the shows. And again, I have no skin in the game. I wasn't working for either station at the time. I was just a listener, a loyal fan. For them as a station then to try to flip it and be like, by the way, we are also really in favor of the Bruins doing well.
Yeah.
Whereas then you had the Sports Hub and all these authentic fans, whether they were or not, it didn't matter because they were new to so many people. And it was like, oh, I'm taking my Bruins business over here.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, I mean, it was so easy to see. You didn't need Arbitron to tell you what was going on. Just the buzz on the street and just the quality of the shows. But yeah, it was the Bruins were the overriding thing for me in terms of, then you just watch the Sports Hub wash over WEEI. And then it was almost like, well, okay, the game has changed overnight and now adjust accordingly.
And then people started getting fired and people moved around.
Right, right.
And, you know, we had a new midday show that we went up against.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we laid the wood to them. To me, that's not a Maloney fault. I think Lou is so underrated. I wish they could find a way to pay him enough money to get him to go on the road and do the Red Sox games on the radio because it would transform their broadcast.
Absolutely.
Lou is that good. And he's a good guy. And I had a bump in the road with him. You know, I'm the guy who called Nomar a loser to his ear on the radio at the Sports Hub. And that's his best buddy. We did TV like the next day. And it's funny, Lou said something. There are very few times that people say something to me where I really remember it for the rest of my life. And I remember we're at TV and I sat across from him like, okay, let me have it. Like, I know. And he goes, you know, Nomar's going to remember that somebody called him a loser on the day he retired for the rest of his life. And I'm like, oh, shit.
That's awesome.
That's a great
That's
line.
That's big time.
It is.
That's
like
big time.
We, you know, I mean, Gary Tengway, who's fighting cancer right now.
Yep.
A great guy and a great
Tremendous
friend.
Broadcaster as well.
We, when that switch happened with him out and me in, holy Jesus, poorly handled. We had the same agent. One phone call needed to be made to the agent, and that would have been it. And instead, I got a call the night before when I'm about to go on set with Gary. Like, I had to sit through a television show with him knowing the next day what was going to happen. And basically, like, well, if you say anything, you're fired. You know, like, you won't get the opportunity or whatnot. Like, there's so much behind-the-scenes stuff, I think, with some of the Boston sports personalities as well, that ends up creating gulfs, divides, issues, all that, let alone the egos that run amok.
Yeah, I mean, whatever happened to, what's his name, Ted Nation,
Ted Sarandis,
right?
Didn't he's in run? Florida.
Oh,
of course he is.
Let me tell you, I actually have a good Ted Nation story. It's a little weird, but when I was leaving Sirius, CBS brings me in. I get a CBS contract. They say, we're going to put you in Boston eventually. So I was full-time salary, working just weekends. It was the greatest 3 months of my life. It was so cool. And I did a morning show with Numi where they were still dealing with Toucher and Rich at the time. This is like 2010. And they were trying to, quote unquote, figure everything out. Toucher and Rich are two of the best people in radio I've ever been around. And they are wonderful people. Like, Fred can be a curmudgeon. So what? I am too. I like that. I really didn't care for Walt. I love all three of those guys on that morning show with Touch and Rich. They're good people. They know radio inside now.
And that's a great show.
It is. They're awesome at it. But Numi and I did a spec show. And the program director, who now I hate like poison and vice versa, he wanted us to interview Ted Sarandis because it was around the time of the NCAA tournament.
Oh, boy.
And if I remember correctly, it gets done and over with, and the program director, we did like four questions and we're out.
Yeah.
He was not happy with it, and I remember Numi being like, you know, having Ted on was the dumbest goddamn thing I've ever heard in my life. And that was like the last time Numi was ever on the Sports Hub. But he, like, let it fly, and that's nothing against Ted, but you know what that was is when we get back to around in the conversation, it's the whole, this is Boston. People don't talk college sports. No one cares. So why are we having a guy on to talk about Syracuse in the NCAA tournament? Sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
I know you and Kevin McNamara would have been tuned in on that, but otherwise, sure. And the rest of the Syracuse Clown Posse Underground Network that I am convinced exists.
Sure. I think it does. Oh, absolutely. I proof positive here.
Yes.
Last question, Rhode Island media. It's changing right now. The Boston Globe made a big play. The Publix Radio is expanding their coverage to Newport and South County. So, as the Journal is sort of fading, we're seeing other players come in. Where does 630, well, excuse me, now 99.7.
Thank you.
I caught that. Yeah, look out.
Tough enough for us to remember.
Yeah. Where does that fit into this? I mean, you got to go digital at some point. I mean, you kind of are, but you got to go more digital. Is
well,
that right?
I think it's a couple of things. Number one is every local market within any big media company anywhere can say, this is what we need to do. But getting people three levels above the highest person in the building you work in to see that is also very difficult. Because what you're saying is, okay, we're going to invest in this, and this is the future, but it's going to take a while. You know, when I was at ESPN in 2007, that's when I was doing stuff on the air for a second time. I remember then they were all about the podcasts. In fact, the college football podcast they have, if you go back to 07, 08, I was the host of that thing all the way back then. And we're almost to 2020, and podcasts are now, I think, really starting to become a part of everyday life for a lot of people in terms of consuming audio. It's interesting, Bill, because I think where we need to go as a show may be a little different than what the rest of the radio station needs to do. I see things for us that are bigger in scope, bigger in nature, more difficult to pull off, and it's taken a long time to just build the base of the show where we're at right now before we can then do some of those things. So I agree with you in that visual needs to become a part of it, but how you go about doing that, I think 6A to 6P may be a little different than some of the stuff that we could or should do from 6 p to 9 p.m. Because you got to remember, after 7 o'clock, we're up against games. And people are going to watch or, you know, they're going to consume those games. So for us, there's a plan in the back of my head. Let's put it that way. And if we can execute it, it'd be awesome. But getting everyone together to do it, that's the hard part of getting everybody in the room. But at least in terms of the ideas that I have in my head, and Rooch kind of knows at least some of them.
Yeah.
I know I've got people that are interested. It's just, again, timing. It's almost like me coming back. You know, the timing was perfect. I was at a fork in the road. I'm going one way or the other. And I think for us, the way to sort of kick it to the next level, that's hopefully in a year, everyone will see it and be like, oh, all right, that guy's only half dumb.
Stay tuned.
Roosh, your thoughts on that future?
I think it's funny in that I look at talk radio as someone who can be looking at my phone when I'm in my car. You know what I mean? And I know that sounds, it sounds a little ridiculous, but I think, you know, people think talk radio, or more, I guess people think AM radio, AM talk radio, which, you know, everyone's trying to move away from that now. And they just think about more boring whatever, because maybe just the topics being discussed aren't the topics they like. But, you know, I'm a sports fan. We hope to appeal to sports fans. And I just think that radio in general as a medium, people are trying to write it off to a certain extent. And I just, that sort of boggles my mind, not because I'm in the industry, but because of what I led off with in terms of everyone you look at. We could probably look out the window right now and see a dozen people staring down at their phones. But when you're in your car, you can't do that. And granted, we want people to listen other places, just their car. But it's like, we are real time following the news, following things on TV, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, while you can't do it. And so whether it's sports, whether it's movies, whether it's politics, I think talk radio can really fill that void. And I don't want to dumb it down to the, you know, I'm not just going to sit there and read somebody's Twitter feed and be like, well, here's what you're missing. I hope you got the groceries and say hello to the wife for me. Yeah. But, you know, that's the one time you really are not able to, you know, and maybe there are other times, like I said, you're doing yard work or you're feeding the kids or something like that. Whenever you're not able to be engrossed in your phone, because we know you are, you people listening to this podcast, you're probably listening to the freaking podcast
through
on your phone right
that's
now.
Right.
Exactly. So I just think that it's like AM radio, talk radio, especially and almost, you know, in particular local, can keep you so tapped into the things you like, because these are people who are engrossed in the things you like and they're able to give you what you want in real time. So I know it's sort of, you know, people think radio, they think people gathered around the RCA and with the tune-in knobs and, oh, we don't need a television. But right, I think radio has come just with the computer, has come straight along with the computer. It's just you're getting it in a different way, whether it's a podcast or whatever. And I just think that, you know, radio is not done by a long shot. And people right now, you mentioned off the top of the podcast, one of the few local stations, you know, and now Facebook is looking to hire local writers because, oh, gee, there aren't any around. Yeah, maybe because you submarined all the newspaper industry, which is fine. But I think that adaptation and that evolving is going to continue to take place to the point where people are going to be clamoring for local stuff like this, because that's, you know, everything's local. And the more local stuff you can get, the better. So anyone who wants to feed into the local market, I say go for it, because as important as national news is always going to be and international news, local, hyper-local is always going to be more important. I think radio and local news outlets like that really really can provide what people are looking for.
I completely agree. And one other thing, I think the survival of talk radio is based in what Rooch said in terms of the hyper-local, but also you got to have people who are personalities. You know, it's nice to have someone in the chair who can weave you in and out of stories and give you information. But at the end of the day, the greatest people in this business have a way of standing out for whatever reason. I don't know why people like me, but I can't analyze it, because if I do, I'm looking too inward and then I'm going to change. I learned a long time ago, I had a guy at ESPN say, listen, here's the greatest piece of advice I can give you. Trust your talent. He said, you'll learn all about how to use it different ways, but just trust your talent because it's there. And if that's, you know, but that's going to be, you know, we're not developing sports. We're not developing talk radio people. We're not. I mean, we've talked about it at our place. You know, we're not doing it. The other station across town's got one show, for crying out loud. And to me, they're only doing it because he's a great friend of mine, but he's been in the market for 175 years. You know, there's no one like him that's around. Personality ultimately sells on the radio, because at the end of the day, when people get in their car and they're leaving work and it's 6 o'clock and they press the button to listen to the show that we put on, they're doing it for a reason. Is it the host? Is it sports? Who cares? Just listen. That's what it, but if we keep all going down the road, and I'm talking about radio in general, of being too afraid, too scared, too afraid to challenge people, worried about what the advertising would be, if we worry about all the BS surrounding good radio, then we're never going to make good radio. And I think we have a group of people in our building who, while they're all very different, they all sort of understand that, and their personalities are different in a lot of different ways, even though they're talking about a lot of the same stuff. But thank God for us, we get to come in with different topics. I don't have to talk about the Warwick School debacle and all that stuff unless I want to. Like, you know, the Postdocs thing bled in, and then I'm at an event, and I say, oh, I'm going to go say hi to Matty Ella, and someone's like, nah, don't do that.
Don't do it.
You know, like, because we peed all over those shoes because he deserved it. And I think that, you know, it's rare that we'll go into the political realm. And when we do, that's where a certain side of my personality comes out that probably isn't completely good for the show. But for a lot of listeners, they're like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. What did he just say? You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Because if I don't let it out, I'm going to sit there and be like, damn, I missed an opportunity to do something or say it a certain way that would be very appealing to people.
Brett Ferruccio, Andrew Gresh, the great station that reaches the beach.
There's something. There we go.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, if it's 7:30 at night, you are listening to us on the beach, and you're not having some sort of coitus or something like that, yeah, then there's a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Or call us after the coitus.
Well, there you go. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Or during.
Post-coital phone call.
Now, during, I've had that happen one time, and it did not go well.
I'd rather not field that phone call, thank you.
Yeah, that's true, because he would have to be the one.
Let that ring, yeah.
Yeah. He would have to be the one to screen that. Well, I'll tell you, some of the people that do call off the air are pretty interesting.
That's for another podcast.
Yes, watch out, and I'll be calling in as well. So,
there you go.
Yeah, please do. No, and listen, thanks for the interest.
Absolutely.
And wanting to have us down here, and I love this whole, I love your setup. It's
boho chic.
It really is. I mean, like, you and I could just bring in the unit and plug it in, and there we go.
There you go.
We could totally do something from here. That's the other thing, too, is you can do a radio show from anywhere now.
That's right. Yeah, just have the couple of mics. You don't even really need a microphone. Just talk to it. I've heard podcasts recorded on a phone.
Absolutely.
And
if I go somewhere, I'll record on a phone in terms of audio.
Yeah.
Or I have a little, you know, dual microphone.
Yeah.
And it works perfectly. And I think, too, it kind of adds something to a broadcast a little bit. When you're out in the field, you know, it has the sound of cars going by and things like that. I love that. We got to have pristine audio. God darn it, it's got to be perfect. And it's like, no, the part of radio that is so cool is that we can embrace outside elements and stuff and have that be a part of background noise. It adds to things. But now I'm going into, you know,
theater of the mind.
Old bastard ways of doing things, you know. I'm Grandpa Simpson.
When Marconi was my boss.
Right, exactly. Marconi and Steve Cass. Mm.
That's all for today, but I'll be back on Tuesday with a brand new episode. Remember, you can follow the pod on Instagram at Bartholomew Town Podcast. Until next time, I'm Bill Bartholomew. We'll talk soon.